With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Romeo Krokiatsky lives in Kyiv, Ukraine. And the main thing he wants you to know about that is that a year into Russia's invasion, things are pretty normal until they aren't.
My best buddy lives in New York, actually. And I was talking to him last week or something, or 2 weeks ago. And he was asking me like how it was. And when I was telling him, he's like, well, it doesn't sound like too much has changed. And then air raid siren went off loud enough that you can hear it through like a window. So that brought the situation into, I'd say, stark clarity.
Romeo grew up in New York City, but he moved to Kyiv as an adult and became a journalist. Now he's the managing editor of the New Voice of Ukraine. I last spoke with him about a year ago when the war was still fresh. It felt right to call him back now and see how he was holding up. He says, at least where he is, it's the erratic electrical supply that would tip you off that a war's on. And when the lights go out, you can hear the difference. You can smell it, too.
If the power's all good, then things look more or less fine, as long as you don't pass a building. But, like, all the generators are diesel, and diesel stinks a lot. So it gets pretty noisy and smelly.
Does anyone shut down at this point, or are people just like, nah, we're going to crank up the generator and keep this going?
No, everyone keeps going. I mean, like, businesses still have to pay rent and taxes regardless of what else is going on. So it's either, you know, keep the doors open or shutter the business entirely at this point.
Romeo's worked out a system for how to keep himself going, too. His neighborhood group chat is the place he pings on the way home from work to figure out, are the lights still on? In fact, this practice is so common that someone recorded a little song about it for a laugh.
The little song was basically people literally just satirizing that exact situation of getting off of work, check your phone, messaging group chat and asking if the neighborhood has power.
It's a very funny little song with these like guys like doing little like drum motions.
Yeah. It was like, is there power or not? Is there power or not?
It's just funny that something can evolve to the point of being funny. You know what I mean? Like, it's like this is actually Russia trying to take away a vital source of energy for your country. And yet you're living it, you know? And so if you can't laugh at it, it'll get even darker.
I don't know, maybe it's a stereotype, but it always seemed to me that Ukrainians have a much greater capacity for laughing at themselves than anyone else. We don't take many things very seriously, and even the serious things we try to joke about.
Yeah. It seems to me a little like there's two Ukraines right now. Like there were the Ukraine you're living in, which is somewhat normal, and then Eastern Ukraine, where things are anything but. And you're the managing editor of the New Voice of Ukraine, so you must have colleagues all over the place, even in these other regions that are in pretty bad shape. How does your experience compare to theirs?
I mean, Kharkiv was just hit today, and an entire bus station was blown up. So it's, on the one hand, I'm grateful. I also feel a little guilty that I, you know, live in a relatively safe place with all the usual modern amenities, power and internet's on, people have social plans. And then when I think about how it is further east, it's hard to reconcile, to be honest, even for me, the disparity in feelings.
How long do you think these two Ukraines can coexist?
Well, hopefully until the end of the war, and then there won't be this kind of split personality, I hope. Ukrainians, if nothing else, are very determined to keep on living.
Today on the show, an update on Romeo's war. It has been a year. He does not see an end in sight. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Early in the war, Romeo Krokiatsky fled Kyiv and went to his hometown, a village in the countryside. He was living alone, wondering each week if Kyiv would finally fall to Russian forces.
It was, at the beginning, it was a pretty chaotic situation because Kyiv was still under threat. The defense lines were pretty fluid. It wasn't clear if the Russians were going to break through or not. And as a journalist, I had to be on top and be covering everything, fielding media requests from every corner of the globe. But things settled down and kind of approached normalcy. I mean, there was a curfew at 10, which was a bit strange. The street lights were kept off.
Oh, to kind of encourage you to stay inside. And I guess also so you couldn't be seen.
Yeah, absolutely. The government was very strongly encouraging people to like keep their lights off at night, to make it harder to target places.
I know that you're a journalist, but I imagine you know all kinds of people involved in the war effort in all kinds of ways. And you've alluded online to knowing people who fought and even died in the war. Would you feel comfortable telling me one of their stories?
Yeah. An old colleague of mine, and actually one of the first friends I made in this country, Eugene Podkovka was his name. He had messaged me at the beginning of the war saying he'd enlisted. And we didn't keep in too good touch, something I'll always regret. But we would message each other from time to time. And Eugene was an incredibly smart guy, one of the smartest guys I've met. He was an electrical engineer, then a IT specialist. And the guy was really, really clever. He was really, really artistic and creative on top of that, which is weird for an engineer. But and he messaged me last in September telling me he'd been sent to Bakhmut. And then in, I think, December, I found out that he'd been killed. I cried for a day, and then I tried to move on because that's war. To be honest, I'm lucky that I've only lost one friend so far. And I warn all of my other friends in the front that if they don't come home, I'm going to go find their ghost and harass their ghost for the rest of their afterlife.
It's like the opposite. You're going to haunt them.
Exactly.
So how did you decide to return to Kyiv? Like, when did you know it was time?
Around mid-December. I don't know if I knew it was time or not. I was just getting really tired of being in Vienna, and most of my friends had moved back by then.
Had you kept your apartment in Kyiv?
Yeah, thankfully. My apartment was there and waiting for me, and it felt pretty great to be home.
Yeah, can you tell me about, like, the first time you walked back into your apartment? Were things as you left them? Had you had someone looking after the place?
It was definitely a kind of like frozen in time feeling.
Was there something you'd forgotten about the place that all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, that.
Yeah, actually, like a month before the war started, I'd finally bought a dishwasher. And I hadn't had a dishwasher in the past 8 years of living in Ukraine. And I'd completely forgotten that I'd bought it. And when I came back, I had cooked myself a huge dinner to kind of celebrate. And I'm looking at this giant pile of dishes. I'm like, crap, what do I do now? Then I saw this dishwasher. I was like, what? When did, what? How did this
get? Who did this?
I had to call my wife and I was like, hey, how do we use this thing?
If it feels strange to hear Romeo laughing, remember, the Ukrainian way through this war has been with humor. After all, President Volodymyr Zelensky used to be a comedian. Romeo says the war has put this slapstick approach in the spotlight.
The Ukrainian meme game is really tight. I think I share a lot of them on Twitter. But honestly, I'm shocked. Like, official government channels sharing like pretty hilarious memes, especially the Russian warship meme. That was
Russian warship. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. It kind of died down now, but people still have bumper stickers of it on their cars.
You tweeted out this song that I did not understand because I don't speak Ukrainian. It's like a song that I tried to play it from your Twitter feed, but it was like, this is too offensive. You have to go to YouTube. And then when I went to YouTube, it was like, some people think this is offensive. Do you still want to click play? And I was like, okay. And I clicked play and I have no idea what it is.
Yeah. This is actually a song that a military analyst, a buddy of mine, shared with me at the beginning of the war. So it's a song about how the Russians are shit. It's a song going from the perspective of a Russian officer and how everything he was told is a lie, and how all the men under his command are incompetent idiots. Their equipment doesn't work, the orders they get are crap, and they turn into fertilizer. Then it switches to the perspective of a soldier who was lied to by his president, by his minister of defense, by his commanders, and how he is also turning into fertilizer.
Is this the kind of thing that like gets shared a lot? Like, people are just sort of like, yeah, look at this, check this out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it brings a smile to my face every time I see, you know, the Three Stooges equivalent of a bunch of soldiers being screwed is uplifting.
When we come back, all jokes aside, 1 year in, what will it take to end the war?
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
I wonder how you're anticipating what's going to happen on the actual day of the anniversary of the invasion. You've noted that Vladimir Putin seems to like anniversaries. So how are you preparing yourself?
To be honest, I am, and maybe I'm being too optimistic here. My expectation is it's just going to be a mass missile attack.
Okay, just...
Yeah, it feels weird to say just a mass missile attack, but we've had so many of them that now when I hear an air raid siren, it feels like comforting, not scary.
What?
Because it's a reminder that we have a warning system and our air defense is working.
That is like the most unhinged optimism I've ever heard.
Maybe. I can't dispute that. But people, in general, people are not as optimistic as I am. A lot of people are like either preparing to spend the night in a bomb shelter or in the corridor or in a basement, or they're just leaving Kyiv for a few days.
You're not.
No, I think from what I can tell, the Russians don't have the capability of doing anything flashy short of nuking us. And if they nuke us, it won't really matter where I am. But I don't think they're going to do this.
When you heard that Joe Biden was visiting Kyiv, were you surprised, reassured?
To be honest, I was completely shocked. I did not expect Biden to come to Kyiv during wartime at all. But for the Ukrainians, to be honest, we're just incredibly happy that Biden came. And that was support as solid as sending tanks and jets, though the U.S. should still do those things, not just show up.
Do you feel like Ukraine has what it needs militarily at this point, going into this anniversary?
No, absolutely not. Huh. There's still no agreement on providing Ukraine with modern airplanes, with modern jet fighters. Ammo is running out, as pretty much every military official has been yelling for the past couple of months. Ammo's running out. There's definitely not enough stuff to keep up a concerted defense of the type that's needed against basically near constant Russian assault, especially with a new offensive. Ukrainian intelligence believes that Putin ordered the Russian military to basically take the rest of the Donbass, the rest of Donetsk and Luhansk oblasts by the end of March. And they're kind of attacking very constantly, taking enormous 1,000 plus losses per day. And they are taking some ground, not a lot, just a couple of meters a day, but they are still taking some ground. And we don't have enough to keep up the firepower necessary to deter them, and nor do we have the modern tanks that were promised. A Pentagon official said that the 31 Abrams that were promised by Washington wouldn't be arriving for the next 3 to 6 months.
Oh my gosh.
Which is incredibly long time. The official said that they hadn't even decided whether they're going to send us existing Abrams or build entirely new ones, when these processes should have been already in place. Same with the Leopards and the Challengers and all the new stuff that's been promised. It's promised on a timeline that is way too far out. So I definitely do not feel like we have what we need to continue to defend ourselves successfully.
That must make you kind of nervous.
It would have made me nervous earlier in the war, but we've seen the pattern of the West speeding up as the deadline draws near. So I think the weapon supplies and deliveries will speed up. And to be honest, another reason I'm not too nervous is that Russia is simply running out of everything. Their mass missile attacks slowed from every few days to once a week, now once every few weeks or before big occasions. The simple fact that Russia is seemingly unable to scale up any of its operations, its mobilization drives are drying up, its soldiers are being sent to fight in winter condition in basically single layer linens. And they're taking 1,000 plus losses per day. Morale has been negative for months now. There's a very physical limit to how long they can keep up what they're doing. I, as an inveterate optimist, hope that that physical limit is reached sooner rather than later, but they will reach it regardless.
I know you've spoken before, and I've heard about this too, about this sense of solidarity among Ukrainians that's been sparked by the Russian invasion. You know, people have helped each other, you know, crowdfunded for resources. I'm sort of curious about whether you see ways the invasion has inflamed divisions too. Like, we did a show a few weeks back about the way some neighbors turned against each other, accusing each other of working with the Russians, especially in towns that were occupied. I wonder if you've seen some of that friction as well.
I mean, it's kind of a joke amongst Ukrainians that one of our favorite hobbies is to accuse everyone around of being traitors. to the point where it's a meme. Like, whenever anything bad happens, just start yelling Zrada or treason in Ukrainian.
Huh.
I actually have an app on my phone called Zrada, which is like a tip line if you suspect someone of collaborationism.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. But to be honest, the divisions aren't that much. I'd even say there's less division now than there was in 2014 after the annexation of Crimea and the invasion of Donbass. Then you had a lot of stereotypes about people from the East being all criminals, all like Russianized. What are they doing here? Blah, blah, blah.
When they fled, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like there were even like listings for apartments that say, oh, we don't rent if you're from the East or whatever.
Huh.
But that has not been the case.
You know, last time we were on, you talked about your doomed optimism about the war. Do you think that there's going to be a year two mark to this war? Like, do you think in February 2024, I'll be calling you back?
Yeah, probably. I don't see this war ending until Putin is dead, whether from natural causes or infighting or, I don't know, a commando raid that's going to make a great movie in 10 years. But I don't see this war ending until he's dead.
Romeo, I'm really grateful all the times we speak. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Romeo Krokiatsky is the managing editor of New Voice of Ukraine, and he's the co-host of the podcast Ukraine Without Hype. All right, that's the show. If you're a fan of what we're doing here at What Next, the best way to support us is to look into our membership program. It's known as Slate Plus. But to find out how, go on over to slate.com/whatnextplus. You can sign up right there. What Next is produced by Elena Schwartz, Anna Phillips, Paige Osborne, and Madeline Ducharme. We are getting a ton of support from Jared Downing and Laura Spencer. We're led by Alicia Montgomery with a little help from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the Senior Director of Podcast Operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. You can go track me down on Twitter. Say hello. I'm at Mary's desk. I'm handing things off to Lizzie O'Leary and the What Next TBD crew. And I'll be back in this feed on Monday. Catch you then.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.